So this has been quite a season. And if you don't remember how it started with a star. It started with a bright star that shone in the night sky, and a bunch of astrologers said, that's something to take note of. And they ended up seeing God in the flesh. We kind of started our God in the flesh celebration a little bit earlier than that by a couple of days as we were celebrating a baby in the manger. But this season that we have been celebrating since then is about the encounters with this fleshy Jesus, with this God that we can touch and see and hear. And we've been celebrating what that means, right? And so we've had several Sundays with white, festival Sundays in the church, when we have celebrated what that means. And Jesus gets wet and gets his feet muddy walking into the Jordan and begins this public ministry. And we travel through and we see what it looks like when he builds a community that shines with the love of God, that enacts what it means to be the beloved of God. And we sort of paused for a minute and celebrated the end of our Christmas season. And again, with this time that Simeon and Anna hold in their hands God, right? And we talked about how we ourselves have these opportunities at the table and with one another to touch God, to taste God. And we continue to grow into what this community looks like that puts flesh on the very love of God. In the last few weeks, we've been able to take ownership of what it looks like for our flesh to shine with the love of God as we've been gathered into this community with Jesus at the center. And we sort of close out this celebration of incarnation, of God with flesh, with this story. One of the weirdest stories, and yet I think one of the most depicted stories, right? One of those ones you can close your eyes and see what's being talked about, right? Clouds and mountaintops. And you can understand Peter's desire for this moment when Jesus shines with the very glory of God, not anything like they had seen with the Jesus of dirty, muddy feet in the Jordan or starving people being fed or healing and touching, right? This is that moment when the very divinity of Jesus shines on a mountaintop. It's what makes Jesus more than just that rabbi starting up a new community. It's what makes Jesus so much more than teachers and prophets and lawgivers that had ever come before. In this moment, they see what is going on in Jesus. That this is more than just a man on a mountain. This is a man with God inside. This is a man who is the very God in the flesh. And for a moment, we want to be like Peter. I've said this before, and I think it's always something for us to ponder. How much easier ministry would be if we could just sort of walk people up the mountain, show off light bulb Jesus, say, look, this is what we're talking about, and walk back down, right? Charge a little money on the way. We'd have plenty of churches full up because it makes it clear, right? If you can say, this is God, and look, bright, shiny, on a mountaintop, the way you think God should appear, it'd be a lot easier. But instead, I think we're stuck more with the gospel writers. Regardless of what story you read, whether it's Matthew or Mark or Luke or John, whatever version of the Transfiguration you read, there's always this struggle to describe what happens on the mountain. There is a struggle to describe what it looks like when God in the flesh shows the God part and not the flesh part. Because it's a struggle. And it's a struggle I think we continue to face as the church to say, this is what God looks like. This is what it feels like to be embraced by the love of God in physical ways. Because that's what we talk about, right? That's what it means to be the beloved community, to take on the fleshiness of the love of God and make sure people know it and see it and feel it and taste it and are embraced by it. But we struggle to describe fully what that means. Because the struggle in it has been going on in the church for 2,000 years. We kind of either fall in one direction and God becomes sort of unattainably high, and that thing beyond our grasp that sort of gazes down upon us, or Jesus, God in the flesh, becomes really sort of just a superhuman, right? A good guy who does good things. But what we struggle with is on that mountain, with those words that the gospel writers try to struggle, that Jesus was there, but they saw more than Jesus, and there was a voice from heaven, and there was this dazzling light. And we can talk for umpteen years about the problems with God only showing up in white clothes and white features and blinding light, and the problems that embodies in the world. But we struggle with what this looks like. I actually tripped over the words here because in Matthew, he struggles so much that he calls the cloud bright. A bright cloud. It's been a while since I've seen a bright cloud, right? Clouds are the things that bring shade or cover up, right? We think of the cloud like what Moses, you know, we think sort of Moses in sort of the gray cloud, like we heard in the first reading, right? The gray cloud that covers the top of Mount Sinai and you can't see anything, right? Or even worse, we think of being inside of it, like fog, right? Things are darker inside. But Matthew talks about a bright cloud that overshadows what they're seeing, and bright, dazzling light, and Jesus glowing like a light bulb, and this voice that shakes it all and says, "This is the one." More than a teacher, more than a good guy, this is my son. Listen to what he's talking about. Because if you didn't listen to the last how many chapters, which have all been the Sermon on the Mount, right, and all of what it means to be disciples of Jesus. If you weren't paying attention before, if you thought this was just another teacher with a long lecture and a little lunch in the middle, this is more than that. This is the amazing love of God incarnate. This is what I look like when I put on skin and you can feel my love like a handshake or a hug. So pay attention. And the crazy thing in the Gospels is that what happens after the Transfiguration, after there's this revelation of Jesus as the man and more than man, right? As the one and the teacher and the one who builds a community and more than that, the amazing thing that happens in all the Gospels is then Jesus sort of begins that trip to Jerusalem. Right? That this is sort of that dividing point, and whether it comes early in the gospel like Mark or late in the gospel like Matthew and Luke, what happens next is that Jesus continues to build a community and continues to heal and teach, but always with Jerusalem at the end of the story. Luke goes so far in his version to say, right after the Transfiguration, Jesus turned his face toward Jerusalem. It's specific in Luke. But Luke likes words, and so he's one of those longer ones. So we don't have in Matthew that Jesus necessarily turns his face toward Jerusalem, but we do realize that what happens next is that now that Jesus has been fully revealed to these closest of disciples, now that God has done God's very best to make it clear what's going on in the person of Jesus, Jesus begins that trip. Right? That journey faces his face towards that moment when the ultimate show of God's love will come. Right? Sort of the cliche I always have is Jesus glows on one mountain to die on another. Right? That in this moment we realize the full breadth and depth and width and amazingness of what God's love looks like. And as we continue to tell the story and see the healing and hear the teaching, we will see what it looks like when it gets put to the test. We will see what it looks like when it gets challenged. We will see what it looks like when the way gets tough and we don't want to know what the ending is. And we'll see in Jesus himself what it looks like. Still fleshy. Not quite so miraculously glowing as dirty and bloody. And wounded and hurt and scared. And yet this moment is that moment that reminds us again that all of that incarnation we've been celebrating for how many weeks really means something. Means something for us. Because in Jesus shining or not, we see what the very fleshiness of God's love looks like. And in this moment, and in this celebration, and in the time that we ourselves are turning to face, we will explore and understand and live into what it means for in our very selves, the love and life of God to be known and seen and touched and heard in the world. And so we sit for a while and celebrate on the mountain and realize that the fleshy parts of this come back down. Embrace a world that needs to hear what it looks, needs to hear what it means for God to take on flesh for us, for love to be felt physically as much as emotionally in the world. So let us celebrate and let us give thanks for all that God has done and all that Christ continues to do. Amen.